In this episode, we are going to break down the lifestyle hacks for hormone balance. What is the ideal day look like if you want to keep your hormones in balance or bring them back into balance? We start with waking up and walk through a whole day, touching on everything from what we're eating to how we're managing stress and what we say yes and no to. And it's a really juicy, full episode and something I think all women should listen to. So let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Staying truly deeply hydrated with minerals while trying to conceive, during pregnancy and birth, and throughout your breastfeeding journey is very important. And nowadays, there are more options for this than we can even count. For Dr. Leah and I, ingredient quality is of top concern, and that's why we love Relight electrolyte powders by Redmond Real Salt. Relight contains Redmond's ancient unrefined sea salt, which contains 60 plus trace minerals in and of itself. Relight powders conveniently contain the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and even two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavor is strawberry lemonade. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the other products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating. Okay, so on this episode, you, Dr. Leah, are going to walk us through some of these sort of, they seem, basic is not the right word, but simple maybe, or they're sometimes they're not even simple. What is the word?
Non-exciting, but essential.
Yes, exactly. Like they're not sexy, they're not fun and bougie and glittery, but they are the basics of lifestyle type habits and ways of being that support our hormones in the proper way in which a human hormonal landscape is meant to go and work. And these are things that it's not going to just be that you're going to do it one time. You're going to need to be consistent and do it again and again. And it might be little things that you just don't really even think about, or maybe you've heard them again and again, but it can be kind of easy to shut out those messages that we hear again and again, because it feels like, oh yeah, I know that. But it's like, okay, you might know it, but are you actually doing it? Because if you're right, not doing it, it matters. So these are the things that you found through working with countless clients and patients and just with your knowledge are, you know, the most effective ways to keep a good balanced hormonal state, some of these lifestyle hacks. So we can just kind of go into it and you start outlining or however you want to go.
All right. So yes, like you said, I call these lifestyle hacks for hormone balance, because that is really what they are, is lifestyle hacks. And really, hack and habit could go together, because it's not something that you just do one time. Like you said, it's something you do all the time. And as unfun and unsexy as it sounds, the body loves consistency. And our hormones thrive on routine and rhythm and consistency. We, as biological beings, have an innate routine and consistency. You know, our hormones surge at predictable times, or they should at predictable times every single day. You know, we wake up and we have higher cortisol, and we have different surges in insulin in response to our food, and we have an increase in melatonin before we go to sleep. And it's this very predictable, consistent, rhythmic pattern that the biological body does on its own. And when we have a lifestyle that doesn't allow for that, or that gets in the way of that, it can cause a huge disruption in our hormones. And then we have problems. And our hormones rule so much more than just our reproduction. We have hormones that do all sorts of things. Hormones on the basic level are just chemical messengers in our body. Essentially, they are like little delivery people that are sending messages all over the body all the time. They take a message from one place and move it to another place and say, hey, do this thing or do this. And so there's a lot more to hormones than just reproduction, even though a lot of times when women think about their hormones, they think about their periods. But we have hormones that rule our digestion. We have hormones that rule our sleep, our mood, all of it. So when our hormones are disrupted, and they tend to go together, it's this really beautiful complex orchestra. I mean, if you can just imagine inside the body, this like beautiful conductor that's conducting all of these different musicians that are running around and having messages, and everything's in flow and everything's working really well, until you throw in major obstacles like not sleeping or being on tech all day. And it disrupts this beautiful orchestra, and it just causes disharmony. It causes them to crash into each other. It causes them to be depleted. And, you know, you can just imagine chaos. And then the person experiences, you know, maybe period problems, like painful periods, irregular periods, issues getting pregnant, but also mood issues, fatigue, issues with their diet, weight gain, feeling tired all the time, having hair issues, skin issues. I mean, anything that you can imagine is like impacted by your hormones. So very important, because I'm trying to justify why you should do these things.
Well, okay. And I just want to circle back to something that you said, which was like, in the situation where people don't allow this to happen, there's going to be problems, or they have something that's blocking this from happening. And that was one of the main concepts I feel that we learned in naturopathic medical school, which was like removing the obstacles to cure is like one of the main things that we do. And so it's looking at a person's lifestyle and diet and mental, emotional state and traumas and triggers and everything. And what are the kinds of things that are blocking natural healing and homeostasis, homeodynamic states of being from just happening naturally? Because we have this innate flow, like you're saying, like our hormones have this innate rhythm, cyclical and circadian rhythm, whatever it is you want to call it, that is pushing, and it's just the natural way that things want to go. Thankfully, goodness for it. You know what I mean? Like, this is a good thing. But when we do things that impede with that, sometimes our hormones can kind of override it. And especially when we're younger, I was talking with my brother-in-law just this weekend about his roommate who's like 21 and how very little this guy eats. And he like sleeps only a couple hours, and he just drinks these like caffeine drinks called Nas or something like that. And they have like 300 milligrams of caffeine, and this guy like hardly eats, and he's totally fine. And he's like just chilling. And I was like, yeah, well, he's just kind of like riding on his youth. But then as we become older and older, it's a bigger problem. But anyway, like, what are the things that somebody might be doing on a daily basis that is blocking the natural flow? If you were thinking about it like a river, and every time you put a negative habit or a bad, you know, activity or behavior or something like that into the stream, and you're going to create this dam of the way that things are meant to flow. So maybe that could be like, you're in a bad relationship. So one of the things we would talk about in clinic and school is like getting a spousectomy or, you know,
or a jobectomy.
Or a jobectomy. Exactly. Like when people are in a really, really hellacious, miserable place with their every day in and day out, something like work, where you're spending so much of your time and not feeling like it's purposeful or like it means something. Or then also maybe your, you know, your work culture is really toxic, something like that. But then with your relationship, same thing. Or maybe you have a bad, bad, bad habit of being like a major night owl. And that in and of itself, just that like one thing, sometimes getting people to just get enough sleep, the miracles that can come from that. So anyway, I just wanted to say that and reiterate how important sometimes in health, we think we must do more or like not doing enough. And it's like, well, hold on. Sometimes we just need to remove the things we're doing that we're negative, like do less of the bad stuff and just allow the body to be, because it's actually always in the direction of health. The body always wants to move that way.
Yeah. I mean, that segues to a concept that I would love to chat about before I talk about what to do with the hormones, which is exactly what you're talking about, but something that I've kind of coined in just the female womanhood world. I call it womanescence. And, you know, when you think about a seed, you have a tiny seed the size of a pinhead, and you plant it in the ground, and it knows how to turn into a giant tree that makes apples. Like, that blows my mind.
I know.
You know, we cut ourselves and our body just knows how to heal. We have sex and life is created magically. You don't know anything that's going on. I'm pregnant right now. I have no idea what's happening. The baby is growing on its own. There's this innate intelligence that exists within living things. And that's what you're talking about in naturopathic medical school. We'd call that the vis. In Chinese medicine, you know, the qi or the jing, which is like the fertility force. And in my mind of looking at women in particular, biological females who identify as women. We're just going to state that. If you're a variation of that, that might not apply to you. But for people who are born female in that body, when we think about the hardware, so if you're born XX chromosome, you're going to have anatomical parts, female anatomical parts, you know? You're going to have ovaries and a uterus and breasts and all of these different hardware parts. And the analogy I like to use is a computer, because I think many of us are very familiar with those, unfortunately. So the hardware is the actual laptop, the actual desktop, the mouse, the things you can physically touch. That's the hardware. And that's similar to us, our anatomical parts. And then we have the software. And the software on a computer is what's actually running. It's Google, it's Spotify, it's, you know, Zencastr. It's the things that are doing work on the hardware. And in our body, that is a lot of our hormones. Our hormones, our physiological processes, our cells, all the things that are happening inside of us is our software. And just like a computer, you can have the hardware and the software, but it's not going to run unless there's an energetic force. We call that electricity. We have to plug it in to the wall or have a battery to run the software and the hardware. You know, the way I see the body is that there is this energetic force, this life force that drives these processes. And for females and women in particular, I call that the woman essence, because it's unique to women. It's different than men. We have a different, you know, force that's driving our ability to create life. And with that comes this unique software and hardware. Whether you ever want to have a baby or not, whether you want to create life or not, we are designed, and this force is constantly trying to have us reproduce, even if we don't want that. And there's all these different factors that play into that, and that affects how we feel, that affects our sexuality, that affects everything within us. And just like electricity, if you had a bunch of a bunch of dirt caked in the plug-in outlet, or you had a fried, you know, wire or something, those are blockages that are blocking that healthy, natural flow of electricity to get to your body. I use this concept of blockages to your woman essence to help kind of conceptualize what we're talking about, because it's not necessarily the software that's wrong. It's there's blockages that are getting in the way, because just like you mentioned, the software is innately going to be perfect. It's innately going to be running exactly how it needs to. Like if you have a frayed computer cord that's getting spotty electricity, it's not Spotify that's wrong because it's not playing your music. It's that you're not getting electricity. So what are those things that are blocking your woman essence? What are those things that are blocking it that then lead to the symptoms of hormonal imbalance? So first and foremost, when I talk to patients or clients, I always like to start these lifestyle hacks and habits and go through the day sort of like a clock and start with the basic stuff and then get bigger. So like you had mentioned relationships and being unhappy with your job. So like let's wait for that later. Let's start first and foremost with waking up.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah. No, I think this makes sense. Walk us through the whole day of how we would do this.
Exactly. Because it is, you know, the practices that you do in your daily life are what keep that flow going or that block it, that then cause these issues. So first and foremost, let's start with waking up. It's so hard. I've been guilty of it. And there's seasons where maybe you have to do it like in pregnancy, but snoozing is such a killer for your hormones. And if people don't know what snoozing is, I always knew what snoozing was, but I remember I had a patient, maybe she's from Australia or something, and they were like, what are you saying? Like, they had no idea what I was talking about. Basically, where you wake up, but then you go back to sleep.
Because you're hitting the snooze button. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Like, we call it snooze on our alarms, at least here. But basically, you wake up either naturally or your alarm goes off, and then you're like, I'm not going to get up. I'm going to go back to sleep. And it's very common. A lot of people literally design their mornings to snooze like 3 times. Before they get up, you know that they can have this like wiggle room. And if there's one thing that someone does to change their life, it's to really not do that. And the reason is because when you wake up, you naturally have cortisol that should be spiking. Mm-hmm. And cortisol, it gets a bad rap because we think of it as our stress hormone. but it's not always our stress hormone. It's an energy hormone. It helps us have energy. That's what helps us pop out of bed and like go eat breakfast and feel good in the morning. And when you snooze, when you go back to sleep, your body's like, wait, are we waking up? Or are we going back to sleep? So it will drop your cortisol and boost your melatonin again. And then you feel groggy and you never get that jolt of good energy in the morning that really sets the stage for your hormones. So first and foremost, don't snooze. When you wake up naturally or to an alarm, you just get up. And I know it feels so hard. I work with patients with fatigue. It's like, you just have to get up. Just do it. Like put water on your face. Just roll out of bed. The next thing is to eat within 30 minutes, ideally, of waking up. So the other thing that happens is when we talk about our hormones, again, think of them as all these messengers. They all have different jobs to do. And we have to give them what they need to thrive. Cortisol needs you to wake up. Insulin, which is our main hormone that controls how much glucose gets into our cells and how we navigate eating, needs to also be regulated throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And if you snooze and then you just drink coffee, you know, you jolt yourself with a bunch of caffeine without any nutrients to your cells, it just causes all sorts of hormonal wonkiness to happen. So ideally, you eat within 30 minutes of waking up, and that meal has high protein and or fat to help with that insulin balance. If you wake up and have a pancake or cereal or a toaster strudel or a pastry or whatever, like something that's high in carbs without protein and fat, it causes a spike in insulin and then a drop in insulin because the insulin is overreacting to that and it hates it. And then you feel terrible because when your insulin drops, then you have crazy fatigue or you have irritability or cravings or whatever. And it causes this whole oscillating spike and drop throughout your day.
And one thing I want to say about that real quick is that if people, you know, sometimes people are not that connected to their bodies and that's fine. But I think that if we do some experiments, we sort of set it up in our mind, like for a week, I'm going to try this and then I'm going to see how I feel. And for a week, I'm going to try this, or even just like a couple of days in a row. Sometimes you can tell a lot to notice how much more you eat on a day in general, how much more you feel like snacky and kind of cravy and eaty on a day where you either don't get much sleep at all, or on the day where you start your day out with something sugary and, you know, lacking in the protein and the fat like that, because it's amazing. And it's because of these cortisol and blood sugar irregularities that are kind of not normal or not typical, but it's like your body's needing to get the energy somehow. So if you didn't get it from sleep, you're going to try to get it more from food. Like on early airplane travel days, I always noticed that where like, I just am never satiated through the whole day and I'm making really weird choices. It's like, I didn't sleep very much. You know, we had to wake up super early. And then, yeah, like notice how you feel when you eat a particular kind of breakfast that just kind of lacks in those areas. So I wanted to outline a couple of examples, I guess, for people who are like, well, what could I eat? So if you can eat eggs, eggs are great. Yep. A couple of eggs, some kind of like breakfast meat that could be like a sausage. It could be leftover meat from the night before, or I know that that's what you do often. You'll eat just like leftover dinner for breakfast. You know, in our culture, we very much have this idea that like breakfast food is different from the rest of the day.
I know.
The lunch and dinner are kind of the same. And it's like breakfast food doesn't have to be that way if you don't want it or like it, or, you know, it's just not possible. So some people hate breakfast type food. I love it, but the whole bacon and eggs thing or the oatmeal thing or the pancake thing, whatever. But the oatmeal and the pancake thing are not really what we're talking about here. We want to eat something like, if you do dairy, you could do like cottage cheese or a Greek yogurt that has a lot of protein. You could do, sometimes I know that you've done like a lentil. There's like breakfast dal type
things. Yeah, lentils are very high in protein. So if someone's like, I can't do meat in the morning and I don't want eggs or whatever. And yeah, the other thing is if you want it to feel breakfasty, you can do a blend. So a lot of times I will take a leftover meat and make like a scramble, you know? So maybe we had chicken, baked chicken the night before, and I'll shred it and then put it in a pan with scrambled eggs and spinach and whatever. Or, you know, you can make it feel breakfasty if you like want it to have that flair. Or you can do quiches or, you know, all sorts of things. But yes, I think focusing on that is really important. And I'm not perfect. The reason why I know so much of this is I've lived it. And not everybody's as sensitive as me. I definitely have more blood sugar sensitivity, so I can feel it. I'm like the canary in the coal mine in almost every aspect of our life and health. But even just this morning, because I'm pregnant, and so I have a lot of food aversions, and it's been tricky because I've had to cut out eggs, and that's been really hard. And so this morning, I made a gluten-free pancake without eggs, and I did have two breakfast sausages, but I had that and a little bit of a smoothie, and it was too much sugar. And I felt – at first when I was eating it, I was like, this is great. This tastes so good. And by 10:30, I was ripping my husband's head off. He's like, why are you yelling at me? And I'm like, I feel like shit. Like to someone who doesn't know that that's blood sugar, because I had that my whole life. I never understood it was blood sugar until I went to school, because I just felt angry. I felt like I was going to just like scream and like rip someone's head off. And then I felt kind of weird and shaky and just like so uncomfortable in my body. Mm-hmm. And I know now that I need protein. It's almost like I'm like a drug addict, because it's like I was like, Mike, make me a turkey burger. If I don't get meat in my body, I'm going to die. Like I literally felt like I was going to die. So he made turkey burgers and we had turkey burgers for lunch. And literally, I mean, this is such like a blood sugar dysregulation thing, but this is why I have to be so careful and my pregnancy is so hard for me. As soon as I eat that turkey burger, it's like all of my irritability just like melts away and like I calm down. It's like everything feels so much better.
Yes.
And not everybody's that sensitive, but I can feel it. I literally feel like, I mean, I've never been like a drug addict, but I can imagine it feels like that. I'm like, oh my God, like I feel like I can like finally breathe again.
Yes.
Because it's getting my blood sugar back up.
And a lot of you listening will be pregnant or are. And it's one thing to note specifically about the first trimester is that insulin can increase. It does increase in everybody, but it can increase in some people up to 15 times the normal amount. And so if you have a lot more insulin, your blood sugar is going to be – it's going to drop a lot quicker.
Yes.
Because it's going to take all the glucose from your bloodstream, put it into your cells. So that's what insulin does.
And I do have high insulin even before pregnancy. I haven't tested me now, but I'm sure I have a lot of reactive hypoglycemia. For any of you who want to look into this more, if you're like, oh my gosh, that sounds like me. Reactive hypoglycemia means you react to the foods that you eat and you have a drop in blood sugar. And so that's just really something important. And so for me, like on the days that I wake up and have, I know everyone makes fun of me, but I love when I eat my salmon for breakfast, because salmon is super high in protein and super high in fat. So like salmon for breakfast with a carb on the side, because it's not that carbs are bad. You can have good complex carbs as long as there's fat and protein. On those days, I feel like I'm on top of the world. I have so much energy. I'm so happy. I feel like I could do anything. I'm like superwoman. Versus like how I felt today. And it's like, wow, the power of your breakfast choice. It sounds so like whatever. And I know so many women, you know, in practice too, I'm like, tell me what you eat for breakfast. They're like, well, I was really busy. So I went through the drive-thru at Starbucks and got a coffee and one of their little like, you know, muffin things. And it's like, no wonder you feel like shit. That's just like terrible, but that's so common.
Yeah, no, it's really so true. And even sometimes with some like protein powders, it just doesn't hit the same as an actual meat or much. And it doesn't have to be food-based if that's not your thing. It could be like the lentils as you were speaking about, but there's this type of, they're called power pancakes, something. I don't know. Wes buys this pancake mix at Costco that he loves and the kids love it. We got a waffle maker and it makes it a lot easier to make them in kind of bulk since there's so many of us now. And he is all stoked about it because it has like 20 grams of protein in a waffle. Like, I mean, it would be a huge amount. Gage can eat, you know, my son can eat a whole one. We eat a whole one. But I've stopped eating them because they do not make me feel good. Even if I slather it in butter and then peanut butter and I eat an egg on the side, it is just too much of like a quick carb, and that protein that's in it is just not hitting the same way. So the way your salmon breakfast for me is like a 2 eggs, bacon, and a piece of like sourdough or something. That is my absolute like farmer's fuel breakfast. For the day.
That's why farmers ate that way, because they had to work all day.
Yes. And it makes sense. And so if we had to give a number just for the listeners too, I think like the goal, if you could, would be about 30 grams of protein in your first meal. Just within 30 minutes of waking up. So you can just make it easy. 30 and 30 is what you want to try to get.
Love that.
Or you know, it could be up to an hour depending on what's going on. But ideally, it's around that 30 mark. And it could be in whatever way. Like if it's too hard for you to make it with breakfast food, then just eat leftover dinner type stuff.
Yeah, which is so much easier for me many times that it's just like, oh, whatever I had for dinner last night, I'm going to heat it up. I do throw a bunch of stuff in just like a pan and heat it up. You know, if I had roasted chicken with potatoes and maybe I have some spinach, you know, I'll just make something super simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. So that's really key. And the next point around hormones is to eat before you drink a bunch of coffee. So again, most of these lifestyle hacks are the opposite of what most people, at least in this country, do every single day, which it's no surprise why so many people have hormonal problems.
Yeah.
Because most people wake up and the first thing they do is they make their coffee and they sit there and they drink the whole thing. And then like an hour later, they're black. Like, let's have breakfast. It's like, no.
Yeah. And there's nothing in the coffee. Around. There's no fat. There's nothing. It's just black coffee.
Or there's tons of sugar, tons of syrup and sugar and stuff like that, which is just terrible. So eat before you have your coffee. Add lots of fat if you can to your coffee. Limit the sugar, you know, because that all just affects your insulin and your blood sugar, which is the foundation for all of your other hormones. So if you have cycle issues, period issues, mood issues, as unfun as it is to hear, it all starts with cortisol and insulin. Like we have to get those in balance. They are the foundation. So the next lifestyle hack is if you can, if the season allows for it, I understand that not everybody lives somewhere where you can do this, but getting outside as soon as you can is super great. I don't do this every day. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, sometimes I'm just not able to, or if it's winter time, but on the days I do, I feel so much better. And if you can, getting light into your eyes, just getting outside, we evolved with nature and our hormones are ancient and old and they are not like, I know about cell phones. I want to be around a cell phone.
Yeah.
They don't. They want to be in the sunshine. They want to be outside. So a perfect situation would be to go outside barefoot, put your feet on the grass. Again, if season allows for it in the winter, that's obviously not possible, but in the spring, summer, fall, wherever you live. And in the winter, you can still go outside and get sunlight on your eyes. It really helps with cortisol and it helps reset that circadian rhythm. So the circadian rhythm is the hormonal rhythm that rules our sleep and our energy. And when our body senses light early in the day, it's very smart and it knows that you should be going to bed at around, you know, bedtime. It understands that. It just, it gets it. And so if you're having sleep issues, waking up, not snoozing and getting light on your eyes is actually going to help you sleep, which sounds so funny, but that's just how it works because our hormones are all connected.
And I will say too that you can wear socks and you can stand on concrete still. So like if you have a little concrete pad and it's really cold outside or whatever, you can still ground that way, get some of the electrons from the earth in that sort of a sense. And it also could just be like 2 minutes is better than no minutes of standing outside in the, you know, getting the sun on your eyes. You're not staring at the sun, but you're facing east and you're just allowing it to kind of absorb into your body and your brain is picking up on a lot more information than we kind of realize. So maybe you're heating up, you're like eating your food in a bowl and you're kind of like standing there for a minute, or you've already eaten and then now you're drinking your coffee in the sun and you're just having like a little moment for yourself. And it's a couple of minutes, or you're brushing your teeth and you have a baby on your hip in one hand, but you're still trying to do it. Like that's how it's going to look in certain seasons, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. But that's really helpful. And again, something that it's not really complicated, but I feel like no one does it. You know, it's like
it goes in and out of trend. I feel like it's like sometimes it's on people's radar because they see people doing it on social media or it's like trendy. And then sometimes you don't see it anymore and then you forget.
Yeah. And I was just going to say to our ancestors, to anyone who's lived before the last, I don't know, 100 years, maybe arguably like 75. They're like, what? You have to like tell people to go outside. because that was just literally what you had to do. You had to go outside in the morning. You know, you had to gather an egg or you had to get wood for the fire or something. Yeah. Like it's so weird that we don't have to do that anymore. And we're just so disconnected from nature. And again, it's so not shocking why we can't have babies and why everything's struggling because everything that we do is so disconnected. So the more we can connect to nature, that's just what our body wants to do. It's what it needs. The next thing is moving. Now, you don't need to do vigorous exercise. And in fact, vigorous exercise sometimes can hinder hormone balance.
Yes.
You know, the people who wake up and especially wake up and do, you know, 45 minutes of like intense HIIT training even before they've eaten breakfast and all of that. I'm not saying that exercise isn't good. Movement is really good in the morning, but you know, the best thing for hormones, especially if you're trying to conceive, would be going for a walk. I mean, the best exercise would be wake up, eat, get your coffee, and take it with you on a walk in the sunshine. Like,
yeah, there you go.
You know, that would be the best situation, is to eat before you do that. I know some people can't eat before they exercise. Like, these are always the obstacles that come up with my patients. They're like, I can't eat before I exercise. I personally can't exercise until I eat because of my blood sugar. And so that, you know, for me, I prioritize eating over movement, but just being aware that movement is good, but excessive movement isn't great. So this, again, boosts your cortisol. Exercise boosts cortisol. So anything that we're doing in the morning is to keep this cortisol really nice and high.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, because I'm sure people are going to wonder, what are your thoughts on intermittent fasting for reproductive age women?
Definitely not a fan. So fasting is a therapeutic tool. I'm not anti-fasting in every situation. Fasting is sort of like cold plunging. It's sort of like these extreme things that can shift health in certain circumstances and situations. However, this comes back to females versus males. Most of the research and the health benefits that we've seen are on males and or people who have severe metabolic issues in the sense that they have diseases of excess. When I say diseases of excess, it's like obesity, diabetes, metabolic syndrome. Like, they're getting too much calories, too much nutrients. There's just too much. It's excess. And maybe in certain circles and circumstances, you know, intermittent fasting can help with that. But as a general rule, especially for women of reproductive age, it is not something I'm a fan of. And, you know, again, perimenopause, menopause, maybe we could have a different conversation. But even those patients, for me, I'm prioritizing breakfast. The very first thing that I do with patients, the very first step that they do when they leave my office is change their breakfast. That's it. Like, and we do experiments just like you said. Let's just do an experiment for a week. I just want you to pick three different meals that are high in protein that you know that you can eat and make. I just want to see how you feel for a week. That's it. Just see. Because I don't ever want someone to change their lifestyle because Dr. Leah said or they feel guilted. I mean, I remember, you know, we had a couple patients or doctor teachers in our clinic. And they were very strict about certain things. And I remember students being like, oh my God, I hope, you know, Dr. So-and-so doesn't see me out here. Like, they're going to be mad at me. Like, I'm in trouble. And it's like, okay, no one should ever be doing anything because they're afraid of getting in trouble or being seen. To me, change only comes when you have an internal motivator and you're doing it for yourself. And the only way that that happens is if you have realized the benefits and you're like, oh no, I feel better when I do this. So I am inherently motivated to do this.
Yeah, because then you're going to keep with the habit too. Like,
yeah,
that's, you see how it changes you and then it's good. And some of this, I will say, it's not as easy to see how, you know, the benefit, I guess I should say, like, some of it's not as immediate and, or some people are not as sensitive as you and I with some of these things. So I can understand that. And at the same time, like, there is a logical reason why this is better than others. And with intermittent fasting and reproductive age women, if you're not trying to conceive, it might be different. If you're, yeah, like you were saying, you know, or if you are of a different constitutional type too, it can be different. Like, in the Ayurvedic sense, the Vata, Pitta, Kapha doshas, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, we should do a podcast on
it. I know, we should. Oh, that's a great idea.
Because I love, yeah, we both love Ayurveda. Yes, and how it, actually, I've had an idea for a course for such a long time about Ayurvedic moms and like how it works.
Ayurvedic moms.
Yes.
Hashtag.
Like,
Ayurvedic moms. Start a trend.
Mom dosha. Yeah. Like, where are you with, because a Vata mom's very different from a Kapha mom, very different from a Pitta mom. And it's like, that would be important to know. It's so helpful for me to know that I'm a Vata mom. And, but anyway, like, the Kapha moms may be able to do a lot better with intermittent fasting, and every body is individual, but like you're saying, for the vast, vast, vast majority, it's just not going to be something that we're doing. And similarly with cold plunging too, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that in certain instances, it would be like the pittas who are really good at cold plunging and they can handle that, because it is a stressor on the body. And it's like, you know, for a lot of women, we are already in these chronically stressed states. We don't really need to have a big spike of stress in that kind of a way. Yeah. Or you can play with that stress in a different way. You could do just a slightly colder temperature at the end of your shower. You could play around with hyperthermia modalities, which stress the system in a different way, which is like a hot, hot, hot bath, which is kind of like what I do sometimes. And I do feel really, really good with it. But I don't feel good. I mean, I don't do cold plunges in the first place, like in a regular basis, because it's absolute misery and hell for me to get into a cold water bath like that. But I also don't feel like great, you know, so we need to, sometimes some of these biohacking things, like always remember to take in this information and your experience of what you actually feel like. Cause if you don't feel better, don't do it. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Stress management can come from multiple different angles, including exercise, proper diet, and restful sleep. But did you know you can also support your stress response using herbs like ashwagandha, shatavari, rhodiola, milky oats, and holy basil? These adaptogenic herbs are the ones found in Needed's stress support product, which has become one of my absolute favorite supplements I take. It's safe to take while trying to conceive and while nursing, and at any point in your motherhood besides during your pregnancy. These herbs are commonly used in traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine to support cortisol's response to daily life and to promote restful sleep. Go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and save 20% with the code HEALTHYMOTHER.
Okay, back to the show.
You know?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So let's just talk about stress, because we've talked about a lot of these lifestyle factors. And when we're thinking about going through our day, we've already gotten through breakfast. We've gone on our walk with our coffee. I don't drink coffee, but I know a lot of people do.
How you don't drink coffee, dude.
Because I prioritize eating 3 solid meals a day with protein and sleeping.
Yeah, but it's like delicious. It's like it's so good.
Because I can't. It's not that I'm like, well, actually I do think coffee's like a little, but it smells very good. I have the genes and the SNPs, I'm sure, if I did my breakdown, that I feel terrible on caffeine.
It
just destroys my insulin. I feel so jittery. And I tried to be trendy in college. I remember I was like, I'm going to drink coffee. And, you know, this is, again, before I understood blood sugar. The thing that woke me up to blood sugar was, I've told the story, I'm sure, before, that I had eaten this huge bowl of yogurt. I probably drank a cup of coffee or something, because I was trying to be cool. I thought yogurt and granola was a great breakfast. And this is the yogurt that has like 30 grams of sugar in it, you know, not like a high fat
grams of protein.
Low sugar yogurt. And I literally passed out walking to class, like full on the grass, on the field, because I had such a severe hypoglycemic reaction.
Wait, what? I have never heard this story before.
Really? Oh my God. Well, it's because I teach it in my blood sugar course in my Balance Your Hormone course. And I feel like I've said it so many times, but I guess you all don't know about it.
Oh my gosh, Leah, scary.
It was super scary, because this was my freshman year. And so even though I was interested in nutrition, I still didn't understand blood sugar. And I didn't understand why I always felt so weird and, you know, all the different things. And when I passed out, I was like, because, you know, I'm so shaky. I mean, and I got up and I was like almost like convulsing. I was so shaky because I was so low blood sugar. I didn't know that's what was going on. And it was a really scary moment for me. And I was trying to figure it out. And I don't even know if it was that year, but it was at some point when I was in a biological class or maybe my biochemistry class or something that we learned about blood sugar, and it all clicked for me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's what happened to me and why I can't drink coffee and why I can't have high sugar. And I have to be so much more careful I'd had episodes like that as a kid. I mean, I remember waking up in the middle of the night once and I didn't know what was going on, but I was like, if I don't get into the kitchen and get like something in my body, I'm going to die. I like tripped down the stairs because I couldn't even like walk.
Oh.
And I remember like waking up in just like a pool of Cheerios. I was just like shoving Cheerios in my mouth. My body was smart enough to know I needed to eat, but I didn't know that. I didn't know what was going on. I just was like panicking. It was a low blood sugar crash.
Oh.
And you know, it's like I've always had blood sugar issues. My whole family does. No one has diabetes. We all have low blood sugar. We have high insulin, low blood sugar. No one has high blood glucose. It's so weird. So there must be some genetic component, but that's why I have to be so careful. But anyways, so when we talk about stress, stress typically begins right away for people in their day, like the minute they wake up. So first hack around that would be to not look at your phone right away. It's a very common practice. People often use their phones as their alarms, or it's the first thing they grab. It's so addictive. Our phones are just the most addictive thing ever. And this is a constant practice where you're checking in with yourself. None of us are perfect. It definitely helps to keep the phones out of the bedroom. That's another practice when we get to the nighttime routine, just so that it's not the first thing you see when you wake up. Get an old school alarm clock. And, you know, really try to be conscious of that. Or at least if you're going to look at your phone, don't open your email or don't open like social media because it will just spike your stress immediately, you know, or the news. I mean, the news. Okay. Like the practice of the world, which is wake up, snooze, drink coffee, don't eat breakfast or eat a pastry and watch the news all morning.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Like what in the world? The news is theater, right? They need you to be addicted to their show, just like everybody wants you to be addicted to their show. So they design it in a way to keep you always watching. And the modern news is a window to every tragedy and every terrible thing that is happening at every nick and corner and cranny of the world at all times. We as humans are not designed – like if there was a village where every single day someone's dead, dying, a child's stolen, there's some fight, there's outrage, there's fires, like the whole society would implode.
Yeah.
Because no human can take that amount of tragedy and terrible news and just horrible things just one after another constantly without moments of joy and goodness. And that's what the news is.
Yeah. And now it's also like just – it's not even just reporting anymore. It hasn't been for a very long time. But it's like super duper manipulative psychological tactics of telling you exactly how you should think. And then really outwardly rude social – like antisocial behavior, weird stuff. Like it is – for somebody who – for both of us who don't watch the news, when I see it now
– I know. Oh like, my gosh.
Wait a minute. This is actually, I sort of feel like an alien who's come to a different planet. And I'm like, because it is so, it's still like, especially our parents' generation watch the news all the time.
Yeah,
and I'm
on like, the TV, just like in the background, constantly.
At all times. Oh my gosh. Constantly. And I'm like, wait a minute. Don't you see that this is like, I literally just wrote that line down. News is theater.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's it. We need to make a t-shirt that says that. That is so
news good. Is theater, healthy as a mother. Don't watch news.
We're going to be like, what's the connection here? But anyway, no, it is really mind-blowing. And if you don't feel that way about the news, let's just do a little experiment.
Yeah.
Don't watch it for like a month. No news for you. Don't intake any watching of the news. If you want to read an article on a news outlet, that's different than watching the anchors and their faces and the words they use and how inflammatory it is and all sorts of different things. Still, I don't think like reading news articles is like great unless you're trying to figure out a particular issue. But just to like scan that website like as if you're just bored is maybe not the best because like you said, human beings – so here's what it is. Like you said, in – history, we lived in bands and tribes of between 60 and 300 people. I know that I'm very specific about that number because I remember
anthropology background.
Yes, exactly. From my anthropology background. And in a group of 60 to 300 people, like you said, there's just not going to be big tragedy around every corner.
Yeah.
And so for us to be wired that way for a very, very long time, that like it, it erases our humanity to hear stories like that constantly, because we can't care as much as we want to all the time for it. So we have to just like numb ourselves, or we have to tune it out, or we have to make ourselves sort of not care, which is really damaging, I think, on a soul level. Like, it's a cognitive dissonance thing. It doesn't make sense. It's like, especially I think once you become a mom, it's really, really different. I think hearing anything about stuff that's happening worldwide with children is, it like ruins my day. It ruins my whole day, life. Like, I mean, I still think about stories sometimes that I heard just in passing that were of things that happened to kids in other countries or in this country, whatever. And it's like, it's just such a heartbreaking thing. And it really, that we carry that weight with us. And it's because humans are interconnected. And it's difficult because I understand that like, we need to have some level of awareness of these sorts of things, because then we can help make changes and we can make positive changes in people's lives who maybe have less resources or they don't have the ability. And I totally do understand that. And at the same time, especially in the populations of while you are pregnant and while you are immediately postpartum, that is not your time.
Or
you
trying
are not
to conceive.
Or trying to conceive too. You are not going to change the world in your one individual person's like cognizance of knowing what's going on in another country's war or something. So for this like 2-year period of time, while you're trying to conceive, you're pregnant and you're postpartum, you need to put yourself in a little bit of a bubble and not take on all of the world's problems, because it will affect you in a negative way. And it will also affect your baby in a negative way. And this is a known fact. Women who were just in New York during 9/11 who were pregnant have a statistically significantly higher chance of the children having PTSD symptoms. The children having PTSD symptoms.
That's
from
crazy.
Being pregnant of mothers who experienced something like that around them. Now, obviously, if something truly does tragic happen to you in your life while you were pregnant, I'm not trying to shame anybody or make you feel any bad. You know, there's benefits of that, really. I mean, there's like, this is an adaptation that the fetus was trying to make for preparing for their world. This is just like in the situations of when people are pregnant during famine, they come out and they have genes that are turned on that if they eat a normal diet, they will tend towards obesity because their body is trying to hold on to calories that they didn't think that they were going to get, because their in utero environment said scarcity, scarcity, famine. We are not going to have enough food. So like, we're going to change your metabolism now so that like, when you are born and you're out in society, you're going to hold on to every single calorie because we don't know what's going to come. You know, there's adaptations that we make that are smart and good, but there is no benefit to putting ourselves in this chronic stress loop of hearing about how messed up the world is.
Yeah. And for the people who are like, but I have to know what's going on. If you must, then find a source that you trust. Either for me, that's my husband. He needs to know what's going on. That's fine. Him knowing what's happening in the world is not me watching the news. And if there's something very important, he will tell me, you know, if there's something I need to know, you know, whatever. So maybe that's a friend or, you know, a guy friend, hopefully, because you don't want other women unless they like really aren't bothered by it. Or maybe you find a source of somebody who spins the news in like a funny way, but, you know, you don't, like just not watching and consuming all of that, because even some people become numb, but some people become hyper obsessed and it's like they can't function because of it. And it's something that's completely out of your control. You can't control it. So that's one thing. The other thing about stress is I teach this in my Reduce Your Stress course, which is part of Fertility Formula. It's basically identifying where your sources of stress are, because I would say stress next to sleep and eating, stress is probably one of the biggest blockages to our hormone balance, because stress impacts not only our stress hormones, but also our thyroid and then subsequently our reproductive hormones, which affect how we feel and all the things. So I walk you through exercises in my course because I feel like everyone's like, yeah, stress, I get it. But it's like, but what do you really do about stress? And identifying what your sources of stress are, I recommend actually writing a list of all the places where you feel stress comes from. And for some people, they've become so immune to stress that they don't even realize it's stress. So that's another thing, maybe asking people, what do you think I'm stressed from? Because they might be like, oh my gosh, you're super stressed out by XYZ. And you might not even identify that as stress. You might just think like, that's motivation or whatever. And so writing that down and then saying, is this something I can change? Can I shift or change this? And that might be a logistical thing. Let's say I'm really stressed by being in traffic commuting to my 30-minute away job every day. That is like my biggest source of stress. I dread getting in the car. I dread being in traffic. You know, I feel like every time there's a car that like changes lanes, my adrenaline just surges, you know, like that's not good for your hormones. You know, and so you ask yourself, is this source of stress? You write down your list. Is this something I can change physically, logistically? And if you can't, how do I change my mindset about it? So something you could change logistically, maybe, or maybe you can't change a job that's 30 minutes away, but maybe you could. Maybe you could find a different position. But maybe the thing that really stresses you out is your mother-in-law, you know? And it's like, you can't change your mother-in-law unless you get divorced, right? But can you change your mindset? Can you go to therapy? Can you work through some things to like, why is she triggering me? You know, what's going on? Like, what is it about XYZ that's triggering? Because a lot of our stress comes from our own unique individual triggers that come from past experiences, subconscious beliefs, patterns, childhood traumas, like all of that. And so that's a really high level view of just how to address that. But being aware of stress and the role that it plays is really important. And so,
I was just going to say, or like, you know, in the examples that you've given, you could listen to like a very calming podcast while you're driving, or you're listening to a message from a friend that's sort of distracting you from the road ragey type feelings, or with your mother-in-law, like you're putting up boundaries where you're just seeing her less often, or you've put up a different kind of relationship dynamic so that you're still kind of abating that. And this is just like life 101, right? Like we have to do things to improve our lives and know that that's okay. And we can change things. We can be kind while we're doing it. But yeah, you don't have to just sit in like your car in silence or listening to like Metallica while you're driving on the freeway.
Yeah. Listen to romance novels.
Or listen to like a playlist that is crafted for calming people down. They make those where they're in certain frequencies and beats and things that will have that kind of effect on you. So just ideas, there's going to be so many different ways to do different things like that, but I just wanted to say.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So thinking through our day, we're going to work or navigating stress, whatever that is, even if it's your kids, you know, if it's like you're home all day with your kids, why are you getting stressed out? What is triggering you? What's going on? Or is there something you can do where you can maybe prioritize resources and get a little bit more help? You know, whatever it is, like there's think outside the box. So the next thing is moving through our day to eat again. Because historically, at least in my practice, I might be unique. I feel like I'm constantly getting women to eat more because I feel like this is something that women just don't do well. And just making sure that you're eating another good, really solid meal, you know, within 4 to 5 hours of breakfast. So not skipping lunch, not having, you know, a few pieces of nuts or, you know, something very minimal. You need a solid meal with protein, fat, healthy carbohydrates, veggies. So whatever that looks like, just prioritizing that again, because we as women inherently are more nurturing. We tend to nurture our children or the people around us, and yet we have a harder time nurturing ourselves. I don't know why. I don't know why we like neglect ourselves so much.
I don't either. It's just kind of, we're wired to take care of others. We kind of expect, maybe like, because if we were living the way that we should be, someone else would be filling
someone
that
else
in
would
for
be
us.
Taking care of us. That makes sense. Oh, sad. That's why we all need someone to cook us food. So just, you have to kind of shift that perspective of, okay, how can I mother myself? Because I see it so often where women, especially if they have kids, will make their kids this like beautiful lunch or, you know, whatever. And then they barely eat anything, or they eat the leftovers of whatever the kid doesn't eat, or they have a carrot stick or whatever. And it's like, you need to eat a whole meal, prioritize that. And if you need help with that, you know, maybe you work with a friend to co-collaborate on food prepping, you know, hey, for this week, I'll make a bunch of food for you and vice versa, or hire someone
or trade.
Like there are so many ways to think outside the box when people are struggling with that. There's food delivery services, you know, all of that. The other thing is all day long drinking water. Again, this is very like whatever eye roll, people just roll their eyes and no one does it. No one drinks water. And I'm included in that. Being pregnant, water makes me nauseous. And I've seen how much it really impacts me not getting enough water because it's so important. So just however you need to get it in, getting clean filtered water if possible in hopefully a non-plastic container if you can to avoid the toxins. But again, people will be like, I'm at the airport and I'm so thirsty, but I'm afraid to drink out of plastic. It's like, get the plastic water bottle.
Yes.
Drinking water is more important.
Yeah.
So we obviously do our best, but this is a 90-10 rule, which brings me to the other conversation of lifestyle hacks, which is, you know, avoiding toxins as much as we can. They are a lot of toxins in our products, in plastics, in our cookware, in fragrances. They disrupt our hormones, and we want to avoid them as much as humanly possible. And I know that that can feel really overwhelming. I have created resources for people around that. Again, Ditch the Toxins is a mini course. It's also part of my fertility formula. If you're like, I feel so overwhelmed, what do you mean? What do I do? It is really important to take those steps. If I had to pick a few things, fragrance is number one. Fragrance is in your laundry detergent, your, you know, scented air products, your, mm-hmm. you know, just get fragrance out. If you're like, I feel overwhelmed, what do I do? Just do that.
Fragrance bags.
And then plastic.
Oh my gosh, the trash bag fragrance. I want to just burn them all.
I know, they need to burn. Because we buy the non-scented trash bags, they still smell because they're made in the same factory.
The same factory. Oh my
gosh. And phthalates are so pervasive and they never come out of things. They're just terrible.
Can we just really quick for the people that don't know, and I know we've talked about this in another podcast, but the reason why certain toxins like phthalates found in fragrance or the BPAs or different things affect your hormones is because they actually literally mimic the mm-hmm. and trigger hormonal pathways in our bodies from happening. Sometimes yeah. they block them, sometimes they're triggering them, but they can sit in the receptors. They look similar enough, and they do other things too, but that is very scary.
Yeah. So let's go back to our analogy, because you guys know I love analogies. So imagine this like beautiful orchestra of all these delivery people running around your body, delivering very important messages. And toxins are like people who are imposters who've stolen the identity of the hormone delivery people. And all of a sudden you're getting an Amazon package to your door, but it's not actually Amazon. And what they give you is like the wrong message, or you're getting letters that are incorrect or wrong or bad. And so they are mimicking your hormones, but sending the wrong messages.
They're sending fake news messages.
They're fake news. Oh no. So it's really bad. I mean, to the point, like, phthalates block testosterone. So if you're being exposed to phthalates, which are found in fragranced products, especially when you're pregnant, let's say you're pregnant with a little boy like I am, and you have a lot of fragrance and phthalate exposure, it blocks testosterone. So that little boy is not able to have his full testosterone expression, which is what's needed to develop his reproductive parts, to make him male, to make him feel like a male when he's born and when he's older. And it's a very big testosterone disruptor. And BPA and other things in plastics mimic estrogen. So let's say you're pregnant with a little boy and you have a bunch of fragrance and a lot of plastic exposure, you're blocking his testosterone and you're giving him a bunch of fake estrogen. So, you know, you yes. can put two and two together to kind of wonder why there's
all this
a problem with that.
Yes. Or like, you're reminding me of we had talked about this. I don't know if it was in a podcast or just a conversation about how hypoglandular tissue, women with hypoglandular tissue who are not able to make enough milk or any milk for their babies. In some kind of study that was done, my goodness, if I can find it, I'll put it in the show notes, looked at their mothers often worked in industries like they were nail techs or hair stylists, and mm-hmm. consistently over time and throughout the entire preconception pregnancy period of time of those little – while pregnant with those little girls were exposed to these chemicals, and then it affected the development or the lack of development of their breast tissue, so that they weren't able to then have that full expression of milk making tissue when it came time for them to make their own babies. And
that's,
it's like,
crazy.
This
I know.
Is just, it's like, it really matters. It really yeah, matters.
Yeah. And it affects you later. Like, the people right now in their 30s, late 20s, 30s, whatever, trying to have kids, a lot of the issues with their fertility came from their exposure when they were in utero in their mom's
yes.
womb, with PCOS, with male factor, with, you know, premature ovarian failure, thyroid stuff. It's crazy. So it's not to scare you. You know, we don't have to live in a bubble, but we need to be aware of it. And it's huge. And I think everyone knows this, yet I still go out into the world and smell fragrance on everybody. And I'm like, clearly we need to like scream this louder. So just moving through this stuff. So we've thought about toxins, we've thought about meals. So we've done lunch, but also remember dinner, same thing. We need to eat 3 solid meals a day, all the things, very important. And then prioritizing joy and pleasure. I think mm-hmm. this is another thing. And you had mentioned this with the cold plunge, where women don't necessarily need to put themselves into more stressful states. And exercise is healthy, but it is a state of acute stress. So is cold plunging, so is fasting. These things are therapeutic stress. But for some people, a lot of people, because they're so hardwired and we're inundated with stress in our daily life, it's actually more therapeutic for us to do the opposite. Like, let's go sit and just stare at a tree mm-hmm. or do something for pleasure. Go dancing, do art, do something that has no purpose. You know, this is something you and I have both found in reading books lately that are for fun. About fairies getting it on and stuff, is just that there's no point. Mm-hmm. And that I think is really hard for the American society. I feel like other countries are better about it. But in the United States in particular, it's so ingrained in us that everything needs to be moving toward a goal. There needs to be something that has a purpose. And pleasure does not have a purpose.
Mm.
And the feminine energy, not that the feminine energy doesn't have a purpose, its purpose is creation, life creation and stuff like that, but it's not like the masculine energy. And we have different podcasts about these concepts if you guys don't know what I'm talking about. There isn't an agenda. And I think for women, bringing more things into their life that is joy and pleasure bringing just for the sake of joy and pleasure.
Yep.
Is very, very important for our hormones to foster that fertility energy, to foster that feminine energy that really helps balance our hormones. So that could look so different for everybody. Maybe it's going hiking or creating art that you then throw away. It doesn't have to even be something that anyone sees, you know, or like I said, dancing, or, you know, for some people it's baking or reading a book for fun, not for self-development or for mm-hmm. bettering themselves or anything. It's just for fun and pleasure. So that's really important.
It's like play, I think, is the same kind of concept where mm-hmm. – and I think it's as you become an adult, having hobbies seems to just kind of drop off.
Yeah.
I mean, for some people, obviously not for others, but it seems like you graduate from college, or maybe you don't go to college, but you sort of enter the workforce and establish your adult life and maybe start having kids, maybe not. But a lot of people don't stick with those types of things that just bring them pleasure. And it is something that doesn't have to be like a super expensive, really involved hobby where you're like, I don't know, hunting or fishing every other weekend. It doesn't have to be like that. It can it can be just reading for 15 minutes, a story where you're getting lost in this thing that's just made up. And I don't know. Or like you said, maybe you don't think that you could win American Idol, but you like singing and you want to just go take some singing lessons or join an adult choir or do something or go to do like an adult theater thing or I don't know. Like there's just ways that we should always try to stay involved in that, because I do think it really keeps us young and it gives so much joy. And I do speak about this in one of the early postpartum update episodes when I was with Sunday, which was that like it was so trying and so hard with her laryngomalacia, her spit up and all these different things in those early weeks. And one of the things that really got me through was just prioritizing, like every day I knew I was going to do something that was fun for me. And at that time, a lot of it was that book reading or like taking a bath or chatting with a friend or something like that. Like, and it would be the highlight of my day. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I am going to get through because I get to do this thing. And it really helped.
Yeah. It fills your cup. I mean, that's people say that, but they don't actually do it.
Yes, exactly.
It's like fill your cup, but like people just go on with their daily life. And just a caveat, a lot of times if you feel like you know these things, but you're not doing them or you feel stuck, a lot of times it comes down to subconscious belief patterns and these things that you might not even be aware of. So doing work around that, if you go to my website, I have a list of all the different practitioners I've mentioned on the podcast before that do some of the subconscious work, trauma release work, all of that kind of stuff, because sometimes it's not just you consciously choosing to have a habit or not. Sometimes people have like real blockages. And if they feel really stuck, you know, if they're like, I can't have fun, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. where did you, find yes. your value in your life, that like if you weren't working all the time, you were nothing. You know, that's like yes. my whole pattern. Like love comes from accomplishment and cool. achievement, and play does not equal love, you know, kind of yeah. thing. So it can go deeper than just go play. So yeah, sometimes exactly. people have a hard time with that. So as we wind down our day for our hormones, so we've done all this stuff. We've eaten 3 meals a day. Ideally, you're not doing intense exercise at night. Like walking, you know, after dinner is great. But if you do really intense exercise at night, it boosts your cortisol, like I've mentioned. And that's the opposite hormone of melatonin, which is the one we want to sleep. The other thing that blocks melatonin, your sleep hormone, are blue lights, which mm-hmm. come from our screens. So if you must be on a screen, maybe getting a blue light blocker, but ideally we're not on screens, or we're at least giving ourselves 30 minutes before bed, not on a screen. So if you want to watch a movie or, you know, do something, fine. Like that could be the thing that brings you joy. Hopefully it's not something super stressful, because I find this too. There's all of these shows and things that are really stressful. And people will be like, their heart is like pounding before they go to bed. And that doesn't help with your hormones either. I'm not saying you can't ever watch it, but just be mindful of that. If you're always choosing shows that are very stressful, not checking emails or trying to work at nighttime. And for a lot of people, social media at nighttime does the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be very calming to you to like look at Pinterest or something. But if you're on Instagram and all of a sudden you're seeing like a picture of the child that was like mutilated in Mexico, and you're just like, oh my God, like, oh, you know, no. It's just yeah. sad and or stressful, or you get triggered by people. Like, let's take a break from social media. If you need to set up, you know, apps that shut it down at a certain time, if you don't have that self-control, because it's not your fault. It's very addictive. You have to like always be working against this addictive component of these things. So being mindful of screens. I'm a huge fan of no screens in the bedroom. That means no TV in the bedroom, no computers, no work in the bedroom, no phone in the bedroom.
Okay, real quick. Yeah. Oh, no. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we plug our phones in another room. And, you know, I typically tell patients to get the TV out of the bedroom. A lot of people will just watch TV until they fall asleep. Mm. Not ideal for your hormones. Same with work. Like, it just have a policy that the bedroom is for sleep and sex, and that's it. You know, you don't yeah. work in your bed. I mean, there are certain circumstances if you have to, if you have a new baby, you know, to do these kind of things. But as a general practice, trying to not make work like on your bed before bedtime, checking emails right before you go to bed, you know, it just is not the best for your hormones.
Yeah, it's hard for people to kind of like conceptualize or compartmentalize rather places in their house for different things if you can. I was going to yeah. say, in terms of the like no blue lights, no screens, one thing that can kind of feel fun and to romanticize your life in all seasons besides summer, at least in Idaho, because the sun never sets, yeah. is doing something like lamps or candles. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, just in that maybe hour before you're going to sleep. But, and I'm really looking forward to doing this winter. I haven't actually, I've been thinking about it for a very long time. It would be so fun. It'd be a little bit, you know, when you have little kids, there's like different stuff to think about with that. And that's probably why I haven't, but to make an ambiance that's like very kind of like you're in the woods. There is no electricity.
And there's a fae person.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking about this because that's the type of lifestyle of the people in these books. But I'm just like, that would be fun. And in the winter, mm-hmm. when it's actually dark at 5 o'clock, you know, it'd be really easy to do that. I think it'll also help children, if you do already have them, to wind down as well. It's like having all the lights on in your house is not going to do that for you.
Right.
So anyway, I just wanted to say yeah. that about, it would be kind of like fun, and also is like that warm yellow kind of red light almost, and helps get you sleepy, increase melatonin, etc.
Yeah, we need that for our melatonin. And if you're a racy mind type of person, doing something before bed to help process and get that out of your head. So if it's journaling, if it's talking, if you're an external processor, you must talk, but you don't want to make your partner your therapist, you don't have another person to talk to, you can always just do voice memos to yourself. Yeah. To do something to just get it out. Some people are like, I have racing thoughts. I have so many things to think about. Awesome. Put them down somewhere else. Put them on paper. Put them in a voice memo. Do something to get them out of your head and allow yourself to wind down. You know, all of the modern things block us. So we have to make conscious efforts against a lot of modern things, which give us beautiful stuff a lot of times, and we just have to be aware of it. It's like when we go to the grocery store and the majority of the food in the grocery store is not good for us, we have to learn how to navigate through that, just like we did back in the day, having to navigate poisonous mushrooms and poisonous berries. And it's just a different, it's a different kind of navigating through things.
Actually a really good point.
I know. And that's that. And then the last point I want to make for your hormones is consistency with bedtime. So as much as humanly possible, I understand it. There are times that come up and circumstances where maybe you're going to go to a festival, like a live music festival with your friend Morgan with her kids.
It's like last
super
night.
Light in Idaho, and it's 9 o'clock by the time you leave. And so your child doesn't go to bed till 10. Whatever, that's fine. Like there's circumstances where that happens, and that's great because you're prioritizing pleasure and community. But as much as possible to have a consistent bedtime is really, really good for your hormones. They love to just be predictable and have consistency, and making sure that the time you choose to go to sleep and the time you have to wake up is at least 7 to 9 hours is ideal for women of reproductive age, I think. I know a lot of people are like, I can function on 5 hours sleep. It's like, you maybe can, but your hormones are not going to like you for very long.
Right. It's functioning and thriving are different.
Yes. Functioning and thriving are different. And, you know, a man who has boosts in testosterone every single morning and, you know, wakes up and exercises and cold plunges, he's not you. That's different. We're different. Mm-hmm. We have a monthly hormonal cycle. Things change. So I just want to note that there's a lot of information here. We've gone over an hour, but there's so much to say. And if you guys want more of this information, I have this all in my courses. So check them out. The Fertility Formula, my Becoming Balanced bundle, all of this stuff is in there.
Yeah, and we'll put it in the show notes too, so you can easily find those. I think this is great. It's kind of just basically like a, this would be an ideal way of living 101, really.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. It is the way to balance your hormones, which a lot of people on this podcast are listening to us for because they're in this, you know, making their family building era kind of thing. And so they're probably wanting to either fix them in order to get pregnant or postpartum because things have gotten wacky or whatever it is, but it's really just best practices for living in general.
Yeah, it's the foundations, and yes, the sexy supplements and herbs and all the things to what to do are really great. I have resources on that too of, you know, what to do if specific hormones are low, but if these things are not in place, those don't matter.
Exactly.
These have to be in place first. The foundations are key. That's why they're called the foundations.
Okay. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us, and we hope it was helpful.
Bye.
Bye.
Before you go, there's one last thing. Did you know that we have a swag store now? The Healthy as a Mother store, where we sell amazing merchandise that is fun to wear. We have shirts and hats and sweatshirts. We have drinkware, bags, journals, all of the things that are healthy as a mother or related to motherhood in general. We would love if you could support our podcast by checking out our store. We love doing what we do, and it's really helpful to get the support and also to spread the word and share our amazing brand with the world. And you get some really cool, awesome stuff. One of my favorites is the crop sweatshirt and one of our glasses that we sell that says Healthy as a Mother. I just think it's so great. So head to www.healthyasamother.com/store to check out what we have. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store. And we are absolutely open to feedback. If there's something you would like to see that is not at the store, we can make a lot of different things there. So head over there, check it out, and we would love to see you sporting some Healthy as a Mother gear. And if you take a picture of yourself on Instagram, definitely tag Dr. Morgan and I, and we will be sure to share. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store to check out our merchandise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.